Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of June 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the Senior Grains Analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the Federal Reserve Bank President in Richmond says the U.S. economy is creeping towards recovery. The Korean ambassador to the United States says his nation will double pork imports this year. Oh, and the demand for foreign procured corn will remain strong, too. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories later in the half hour. Hey, the University of Illinois is offering up some free resistance testing on water hemp. It's a project funded in part by the Illinois Soybean Association. We'll have all the details. And in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, to discuss the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, futures finished like this on a Monday afternoon. July wheat at $8.72, down 7.75 for the soft red. Next year's July futures finished the day at, well, I don't have next year's soft red, actually. Actually, that was next year's soft red. July nearby at 7.43 was down 16.25. July corn futures were 4.5 lower today at 7.82.5. September at 7.51.75, down 4.25. And December at $7.04.5, 8 cents lower. The March contract at 7.16.25, down 6.75. Next year's December futures in the corn pit at 6.40.75, down 2.25. July soybeans today, $13.82.75, down 4.5. The August at $13.77.5, down 4.75. And September, $13.75.25, down 4.25. November beans, 5 cents lower, $13.76.75. The January down 4.75 at $13.86.5. And November of 2012, 8 cents higher at $13.68.25. July bean meal at $3.70.10, finished $3.20 lower. July oil at $56.82, down 3 cents. Live cattle futures in the August at $104.25, 55 cents higher. August feeders at $124.77.5, up $1.15, and lean hogs at $92.47.5, up 77.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's how the outside markets finished the day. July crude oil still trading, down $2.03 now at $97.24 a barrel. The ethanol at $2.77.7, just a tenth of a cent higher for the day. July natural gas at $4.64.5, that's 11.2% lower, and the diesel fuel or heating oil down 0.2% to $3.10.2. Gold futures finished at $1,515 even, $13.60 lower, and the Dow at 11,984, just about 32 points higher for the day. The dollar at 74.5 is down 0.29. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service on a Monday afternoon. They say mostly sunny skies today, yet a high near 76, east winds at about 9 miles an hour. Tonight, a 30% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms also come after 1 a.m. this evening. And we'll have a low this evening of 57 degrees. East winds at about 9 miles an hour will continue. Tuesday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy. A high of 76. East-southeast winds at 9 to 13. They'll gust as high as 16. And Tuesday night, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy. A low of 60. East-southeast winds at 9 to 11 miles an hour. By the time we get to Wednesday, that 50% chance of showers will continue. Thunderstorms, too, mostly cloudy. A high of 76 degrees, and Wednesday night, a 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a low of 62. Thursday, a 40% chance of showers, partly sunny, a high near 79 degrees, and on Friday, partly sunny skies, a high of 79 as well. Friday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms, a low of 67. More on the ag weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. On the phone line with us today to take a look at the agricultural futures markets, Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, tell me about the marketplace and what you've seen there in the last day or so.
Well, a little selling pressure today. Outside market's kind of sloppy. Crude down over $2, down $3 at one time. Gold, silver down. Funds sold about 6,000 corn. They were sellers of the beans and wheat also, too. Starting out on the negative note here for a little profit-taking. Weather concerns, there's still some weather concerns, but not as dramatic as it was here just a few days ago. So market's in a position to kind of back and fill. We saw corn rally about 57 cents there last week, and beans had a good bounce, too. I think they rallied just about dang near a dollar. Well, not a dollar, but about 35 cents or so off those lows. And so waiting for the next news to come into the marketplace. We'll see what this afternoon's weekly report show, see if there's any big news there. But as far as getting the market moved dramatically one way or the other, it could be influenced by the outside markets or the reports that we're going to see here at the end of the month.
Now, I've heard a couple of different things from analysts as I've talked to them over the past week. Some are just demand destructive bears, thinking that destruction of demand may already have been put into place in the marketplace and that we will see some of that continue, and that are very concerned about a double dip in the economy. Others say, well, we might drop back now that we've reached some new contract highs and wait for the end of the month June reports, but that long term, when they look at the 695 as the carryout for the coming corn crop, that's pretty tight and means that simply nothing can go wrong between now and the following year's harvest, and they're feeling more friendly to the marketplace.
Well, you said a lot there. It could go up, it could go down. It's going to create a volatile market as we move along here. Basically, over the near term in here, we are seeing some momentum indicators rolling over. We made a new high the futures on corn, but the momentum indicators failed to make a new high here. So it's a cautionary sign in through here. We'll have to watch the cash side of the equation. Basis remains strong. We're seeing cases where farmers are getting 30 over, and the buyer's going to pick up the corn off their farm, too. So whenever the cash news starts to slow down, that could probably signal that, we've gone far enough. One thing, when you look back on history, 100% of the time when we've seen moves up like this, we've gone down. But it's just when and from what price level. That's the million-dollar question, of course. And that's why, from a risk management point of view, as a producer, you got to use these up moves in here to, get some hedges off, get some downside protection. And now, as a trader, it's a whole different story. The market's still got some opportunity here. The key is probably today's lows on the short-term scale. These corn, today's lows, pretty close to 38% back down to the previous low. In the November beans, 1370 needs a hold. There's starting to be quite a few sell stops coming to the marketplace just under 1370 there, Todd.
On the fundamentals side, something that's a little unusual, but we've started to talk about and certainly has been talked about in the press for a bit, is the Missouri River, potential flooding. It doesn't look like that's going to be unavoidable at this point, that there will be flooding, and that they will open the dams up through maybe August of this year to try to relieve pressure that's coming from the snowpack melt. And what impact does that have, and how many acres do you think are there that might be lost?
Geez, from one side of the country to the other side of the country, that's a good question. This flood activity is not going to be avoided, and it's going to be a problem clear into probably August. That being said, though, when you look at the earlier flood concern and the acres there, just to pass on to you, we've had producers along the Ohio River Valley. They had 5 to 8 feet of water over their farm. They're planting beans today. So I wonder if we're trading earlier flood acres for new flood acres, and how that all averages out, I don't know. We'll have to see how the news unfolds here and see what actual reports we get from earlier wet areas that did get planted versus new wet areas that's not going to get planted at all.
There has been some discussion that most farmers are concerned at this point about not getting themselves too far ahead of the cart, that last year they sold far too early, and they don't want to do that again this year. Is there a cautionary tale that they need to think about before they make decisions not to make sales?
Well, that's a tough one, yeah. Especially if you're in areas been devastated by the weather. I'm actually the bad guy because I've gotten guys into some futures hedges, and they've had to make some margin calls. And I'm the bad guy because I talk guys into buying put options, and the market's gone higher. But the thing about some of these strategies, guys have lost 5 to 30 cents on a strategy, but yet they picked up 80 to 90 cents in the cash on new crop. On the old crop July corn, for example, guys, did the same thing, did some price floors, and yes, they lost 15, 30 cents, but they've made $2 to $3 on the upside. So you got to stay flexible in your marketing and have a covered position. Everybody's a little bit different. And so that's where the art of working with an advisor comes into play. And you've got a lot of good people in your programs that can put producers in a position to have a floor in them, but leave the upside open so you don't get committed to overselling, Todd.
It's all about managing risk.
It's the tough part about it, yeah. And you got to do something you're comfortable with. And that's the key, because like I mentioned, the risk is to the downside as a producer at this point in time.
Hey, thank you so much for being with us.
All right, take care, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. Kurt, of course, is here each and every week. You can always hear Commodity Week, the Closing Market Report, anytime you'd like off of our website. Commodity Week, too, for that matter, at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find everything from our pre-opening market report to our closing market report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Now, just to take up the divergence in the marketplace for a moment, on Commodity Week this week, our guest will be Bob Utterback of Utterback Marketing. You can find him on AgWeb if you'd like and in Farm Journal. Talked to him this morning, and Bob says simply, and he usually feels like he wants to be a bear, but that he's all apart about demand destruction. We'll talk with him more about that. And then later in the week, and if you sign up for the Farm Doc Daily website, you'll see this come out. It has not been released yet. Daryl Good and company have been taking a look at what happened last week and how farmers managed their risk, suggesting that there was really maybe at least a dollar difference between the reported price on the monthly scale and what farmers actually received. And it's all about whether they sold too early or not. So that's coming out. So you can see both of those kinds of juxtapositions. You can hear one of them on Commodity Week. We record that Friday afternoons. The other one you can pick up off the Farm Doc Daily website. Of course, I'll have Daryl and or one of the other folks as an ag economist that writes that story on our air, too, here during the Closing Market Report as the week progresses. Now, here's Dave Dickey with today's Agribusiness News.
In Agribusiness News, Richmond Federal Reserve Bank President Jeffrey Lacker says that the U.S. economy is recovering only slowly and growth could remain soft for some time as employers remain reluctant about hiring. In a speech that focused primarily on the role of manufacturing in the U.S. South, Lacker's occasional nods to the national outlook were rather glum. Until recently, Lacker was predicting the U.S. economy would grow between 3 and 4% this year. The U.S. economy grew just 1.8% in the first quarter at an annualized clip. South Korea's ambassador to the U.S. says the nation's pork imports will double this year, while its demand for foreign corn will persist even as prices hit record levels. Han Duck-soo says that imports of livestock, including pork and beef, have climbed. South Korea needs to increase foreign purchases as demand rises while supplies have suffered because the country's domestic herds were culled after an outbreak of foot-and-mouth disease. In 2010, the U.S. exported 220.2 million pounds of pork to South Korea. Federal data released this week show through April exports to South Korea were 233.9 million pounds, up 84 million pounds for the same period a year ago. As for corn, Han expects demand to continue even in the face of prices that reached nearly $8 a bushel in Chicago Board of Trade trading on Friday. The head of the World Trade Organization today says that he is dismissing the notion that the Doha round of trade negotiations is dead, and he holds out hope that a band of smaller countries might help prod India, China, and the U.S. toward agreement. WTO Director General Pascal Lamy says that after nearly a decade of discussion, most of the trade topics on the table were, quote, reasonably ripe for conclusion. 10 years of negotiations in the WTO have failed to seal an accord. The WTO last week postponed negotiations on a slimmed-down deal that would require rich countries to make good on promises. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can find along with all of our agricultural programming at willag.org. From the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between, post it not long after it airs on our radio stations. Now, up next, you know the University of Illinois is offering free resistance testing on water hemp. I'll have all the details on the Illinois Soybean Association-funded project. Do you think you have a resistant water hemp population? If so, send your water hemp samples to the University of Illinois for a free screening. The Illinois Soybean Association is providing funding for the 2011 growing season to test Illinois water hemp samples for resistance to glyphosate, PPO inhibitors, and ALS inhibitors. Aaron Hager, University of Illinois Extension weed specialist, says just because a water hemp plant survives following application of glyphosate doesn't mean it's resistant to glyphosate. It needs to be checked. The water hemp sample should be collected following an application of glyphosate or other herbicide by selecting 5 survivors in the field. Remove the top inch or two containing young, newly emerged healthy leaves from each plant and seal them inside a sandwich-sized Ziploc bag. Each plant must be enclosed in a separate bag. And then just overnight the envelope to Dr. Chance Riggins. That's Chance Riggins at 320 Ermel, E-R-M-L, or Edward R. Madigan Lab at 1201 West Gregory Drive, Urbana. Ideally, samples should be sent the same day they're collected. Be sure to include your contact information, any details about the herbicide use history in the field, and the location of the field, GPS coordinates, if possible, at a minimum, indicate which county the field is located in, and send that along with the samples. It's a free service. However, turnaround time cannot be guaranteed. privacy will be respected of those sending samples. The exact location of samples or names associated with samples will not be made available to anyone without the grower's permission. Details of the Illinois Soybean Association offer can be found online at ipm.illinois.edu/bulletin. Just search Google for Illinois and the Bulletin. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Closing market report comes to you from the land grant in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. Up next, let's take a look at what's been happening in the world of the cash grain market. On the phone line with us is Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Hi, Greg. How are you today?
Doing good, Todd. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, it was a beautiful weekend. It's a beautiful day. The weather is just fantastic, and I'm feeling pretty happy, I suppose. The marketplace has rewarded producers over the last week, and I'm wondering whether they have taken advantage of that or not.
Yes, we did see a big, I don't want to say a big, but a noticeable increase in farmer movement, especially in the new crop corn. Old crop corn, not so much, just because there's very little of it left out there. But we did see new crop sales pick up today.
Have they been calling and asking, is this it?
Oh, they've been asking that for a year now.
They've been wrong for a year, so.
But
well, they've been right to ask.
Exactly.
How about that?
Doesn't hurt to ask. But just looking back, a year ago, July corn was 401, and today we're 782. So corn's gone up $3.81 in a year. Beans have gone up 446 in a year. Wheat's gone up $1.91 on the board in a year. And then you throw on top of that basis improvement as well. Some of these basis levels are getting, I don't want to say, I do want to say toppy. I think we're getting to the point where basis levels probably don't have to go up a whole lot more. You know, people are just going to, you know, stop buying corn at 60, 70, 80 over. They're going to, you know, maybe sell some of that back. Some of these ethanol plants, for example, just can't, I don't think, can make a go of that. So I think we're starting to get to the point where, you know, maybe we call the market toppy. You know, the problem is if we're off by a week when corn moves 50, 60 cents a week, if we say we're at the top and we're within a week, we still may be 50 or 60 cents away. But it's starting to sure look like we're, you know, there's more downside than upside potential. And I haven't said that for a long time, but it just feels like we're getting awful toppy.
No, I don't know if you miss corn by 50 cents and that 50 cents is at 750. I don't suppose that's too bad, is it?
It's not bad, but you'd like to get all you can get. But that's going to be next to impossible to try to pick a top in the, you know, the exact high in this market is going to be tough. So, you know, I think we just have to go back to saying, you know, our crop looks pretty good. And at what point in time can we lock in good profits? And, you know, is there more upside than downside? Up until now, I'd say there's been more upside than downside. But at these levels, I have to think maybe there's more downside than upside.
Even with just a 695 carryout?
Well, obviously, weather in July is going to be a big deal. You know, I can make a case for much higher corn prices, but it's probably going to take a couple of things, some weather problems and no disturbances in the outside markets. I'm starting to get a little concerned about our debt discussions and, you know, the impacts of the European problems and the U.S. problems on top of that. So it may not just be a supply and demand issue as far as weather is concerned. It may have a lot more to do with these outside markets and what speculators do.
And your bids?
Cash corn tonight is 804, new crop 676, old crop beans are 1388, new crop 1347, and new crop wheat is 723.
Thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
Back in 2 minutes.
It's National Lobster Day. Prior to the 20th century, lobster was not a popular food in the U.S. In fact, eating lobster was considered a mark of poverty, or as a food for slaves or lower members of society. And lobsters were also used as a fertilizer for farms. The market for lobster changed when modern transportation methods allowed the live shipping of lobster from ports to large cities inland. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Elizabeth Hamilton, wife of Alexander Hamilton, the first Secretary of the Treasury, is said to have served a new dessert treat to General George Washington. The highlight of the dinner party was ice cream. After its introduction, ice cream often appeared on the presidential Thursday dinner menu. By the way, an entry in Washington's ledger reveals that he purchased a cream machine for ice at Mount Vernon. In 1817, Richard Lovell Edgeworth died, an Anglo-Irish inventor. Among his many inventions and innovations was a turnip cutter, as well as various improvements in agricultural machines, including a one-wheeled carriage adopted to go over narrow roads. And in 1893, African-American inventor T.W. Stewart received a patent for a mop. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago is on the phone line with us to take up the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Mark.
Hello there, Todd.
It's a beautiful day here. I want you to take up a weather-related phenomenon and talk to me, if you can, just a bit about snowpack and the melt that's running into Missouri River and whether that will happen faster or slower because of temperatures in that part of the world.
Well, yeah, we're certainly seeing, record flooding here occurring in numerous areas, particular now is the Missouri River Basin. And its combination is, what you mentioned earlier, snow melt as the Missouri River starts way up north. And with the snow up in areas such as Montana and more so even in the mountainous areas there out west, and with their colder pattern and very stormy pattern of late, and in addition to your just heavy rainfall in portions of eastern Montana, you've had this record high crest, which is now moving down the Missouri River, and coupled with that, just additional rain activity here of late, and that continues to cause these very high water levels and a lot of flooding that's taking place in agriculture areas near the Mississippi, near the Missouri River. Still used to talking about Mississippi River after their floods a month ago or several weeks ago.
Indeed. So when you take a look at that Missouri River basin over the next couple of weeks, will be there additional precipitation that will complicate the problem or not?
Yeah, we do see additional rounds of precipitation across that zone and across portions of the Midwest as well. So as the Missouri River here heads southeastward towards the Mississippi River, we do see more rain activity across those areas. So with the problems and issues that are ongoing right now, unfortunately it's going to continue here for some time with no sign of any significant resolution to the issue. And what they need right now is an extended stretch across the north-central U.S. of totally dry conditions here for several weeks, and we just don't see that here in the short term.
Oh, don't ask for one for several weeks. maybe several days. Week sounds like an awful long time to me. Then turn your attention to the eastern Corn Belt. Have they dried out considerably?
Yes, Todd. We've seen a significant, significantly drier conditions here, especially on the wettest area, which is centered on Ohio. And that's seen improvement here over the past couple of weeks. And we do see more rain activity, or at least a pattern turning a bit more active for that zone, but certainly not a repeat performance of what transpired back several weeks ago.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Todd. Glad
Mark,
to be here.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on this Monday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.